Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. We are here live here on WEAA, and we're about to talk with Woody Curry, clinical director of the station. Every month he brings something that we're not sure is going to happen, but today is something we don't think about. Do you know that more people abuse prescription drugs without a prescription than people using heroin, cocaine, marijuana, and every other illegal drug combined? Think about that. We'll talk about that in the first hour. Then we'll take another trip to Madison, Wisconsin. Right now, we turn this over to WEAA traffic. Check on the roads. Make sure you note which way to go and which way not to go. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Once a month, we have a visit from Woody Curry, who's clinical director at the Baltimore Station, one of the most effective drug rehab and intervention programs in the United States of America. And as you know, Woody's story, he was a Vietnam veteran, came back, went through his own trials and tribulations with alcohol and being incorrectly diagnosed as mentally ill. Some of us as close friends may, no, I'm just kidding. Incorrectly diagnosed as mentally ill, alcohol, drug abuse, but went on to create a very unique program. And we talk every month about addiction and our culture and society and who we are. And today we're going to talk about prescription drugs, which is something we don't talk about enough in our society and culture in this city and what may be going on under our noses. I'll just read one stat that I'll introduce Woody to you. 7 million Americans are abusing prescription drugs and that they are not prescribed for. And that's more than the number who are abusing cocaine, heroin, hallucinogens, ecstasy, and inhalants combined. An 80% increase in people using prescription drugs illegally in just the last 6 years. And Woody Curry, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be back.
So you always bring us some good news, don't you?
Well, I don't know just how teasing, good man. It is, but, you know, it is what it is. This is nothing new. Really, I've been around for a minute, and there was a time when the drug of choice on the streets of Baltimore, we used to call them dummies.
Dummies, I remember dummies.
You remember dummies?
Red pills you used to take.
Yeah, well, the red pills were Seconal.
Right.
The yellow pills were Nembutal.
Right.
And then we had Phenobarbital, you know, the little white ones, and other pills called Christmas trees, which was Tylenol. So these were all prescription drugs, and people were getting high off of them. Now, this was back, you remember, this was back in the early 60s, in the late 50s and early 60s. So we've been down this road before, but not to the degree that we've seen it now, because during those times there wasn't a heroin epidemic or a cocaine epidemic. There was a lot of alcoholism, and there was always been alcoholism. But the thing about alcoholism, it's not sensational. You know, it doesn't have the glamour of the Colombians and the drugs and the high-powered weapons and Miami Vice and, you know, Pablo Escobar, all that stuff that makes it interesting isn't being done as far as alcohol is concerned. And plus, alcohol is taxable, so it's tolerated. Prescription drugs are tolerated because they're legal, too. So you can see the same kind of denial that's going on collectively with the population, with a lot of people in the medical field that fuels this thing. I mean, there's a bigger picture than just a person on the street buying the drugs. There are other variables that you have to take a look at. Most of us in the treatment industry, we know about it. I mean, we know it. We see it. And we are moving towards developing strategies to deal with it. But the fact that it's legal, the abuse is illegal, irresponsible behavior, but the drug themselves are legal.
This is coming on many levels. This is you're seeing a little bit. On one hand, people are abusing the drugs; they're getting over the counter, but it's also being hustled on the street.
They're not getting them over the counter; they're being prescribed, and then you can buy a lot of stuff on the internet without a prescription. You know, and then the people in countries outside of the United States that don't regulate the production and distribution of drugs the same as we do, they know there's a big market for them here in the United States, so they're coming across the border in large numbers, too. Way back in the day, you remember Quaaludes went through the same thing. you see. So it's just happening on a larger scale now because the world got flat, you know, and people start doing business all across all kinds of boundaries, and the dollar reigns. So the collateral damage done by all of these medications, I guess it's just as trying to be contained and relegated and, you know, as best you can. But the human effect of these drugs are a lot greater as far as the addictive potential as some of the drugs that we go after a lot, you know, because it takes a longer time and it's a much more difficult detox to come off of benzos and Vicodin and Oxycontin and these things. They're opiates, you see, or partial opiates, and they are just as addictive as the ones that you buy on the street. They're more addictive because the ones on the street have been diluted, cut for the profit, you know, so the dealer can make some money off of it. Everybody down the line gets a piece of the action. But these things that they're using on the street now are unadulterated. Most of them are, but then you don't know whether they're black market drugs or whether they're produced by the pharmaceutical companies. Because I've seen drugs with Pfizer written on them that weren't Pfizer drugs, but Pfizer sells. I'm not making an example out of that, but I'm just saying some of the ones that I've come across have brand names on them, but they're not really the brand name drugs. So they're black market drugs. And there are a lot of young people now that are starting to take them on the streets that they're a lot cheaper and they're more available. And their parents get them. And they take them out of medicine cabinets. And they take them and buy them from other kids. And they buy them on the street just as openly. It's a big moneymaker now.
I mean, one of the things I've been reading is that, I mean, after we talked about this, and that 10% of high school seniors admit abusing powerful prescription painkillers. And 40% of teenagers and almost an equal number of their parents think abusing prescription painkillers is safer than abusing street drugs.
Well, I wish somebody would have told those four young girls down in South Baltimore that I know died this year already of Xanax and Clonopin and overdoses along with alcohol and the other stuff that they were taking. I wish somebody would have told them that.
Folks, why don't you join us here, 410-319-8888. We're going to get into some of the sticky details of this, why it's not being talked about as much as it should be, that this is an issue we've not talked about in the press very much, not talked about in our circles very much, but that is really here. And so we are trying to bring it forth to you to think about, wrestle with, and maybe you have your own examples and you want to talk to us about it. Woody Curry is with us to talk about the issue of the growing use, abuse of prescription drugs. And the hustles that are going on, I think, that I know are going on between pharmacies and people hustling those drugs out of pharmacies into the street, the going across the border, the difficulty in getting, we'll talk about a little bit of getting this under control because large pharmaceuticals worry about their profits. This is a very complex issue. 410-319-8888. We'll tackle each one of those with Woody in a minute. Let's go to the phones here. And James, you're on the air. Hi, James. You're on the air. We have James there?
Yeah.
You're on the air, James. James, you're on the air. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you. Yes. I've been delivering prescription drugs for almost 20 years, and I've seen the black market for prescription drugs. The black market has legal prescription drugs out there on the street, and they're like $20 a pill. And working at a pharmacy, most of the time we don't charge that much for a prescription, for one pill. But all echelons of people get addicted to drugs. Rich folks get addicted to drugs. Poor folks get addicted to drugs. The pain medications, people write false prescriptions. It is an epidemic in this country. The prescription drug programs that insurance companies provide, and the generics as well as the brand name prescription drugs are highly sought after by illegal drug dealers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at not only when we're talking about the drug system, illegal drugs like marijuana and cocaine, if we're going to have legal prescription drugs, There really needs to be, the system needs to take another look at, you know, illegal drugs. And you're talking about, as Mr. Woody was talking about, opiates. And marijuana is not even an opiate, and it's a Schedule II drug. I mean, so the drug system, the DEA, and the way that they have it set up, the incarceration component, is so out of whack that, you know, anybody who really understands the financial components of drug sales understands that, you know, it's a joke. It's just a joke. So I would just like to make that known to folks that, and I am a legal drug dealer, by the way. Okay, so I've never been arrested, and I have a retirement plan.
So that's legal with an L, not an I.
Right.
Right. Woody?
You remember early this year when somebody hijacked a pharmacy truck down in
That was one of the trucks for the company I work for,
yeah.
Yes.
And they didn't stick up a drug dealer. They went right at the source and took a whole truckload of stuff. And I know they didn't trade it off for somewhere. It's probably on the street right now.
And that's what I was saying, that at a certain point in time, the legal drugs are going to be sought after, because actually they can charge more for the legal drugs than they can for the illegal drugs.
It's a better quality of drug.
Thank you. It's refined.
Mm-hmm.
It's degree. So,
more addictive, too.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. I've seen people go to jail. I mean, we had a doctor writing prescriptions, and and a guy coming in the pharmacy with a big knot of money, paying cash money for him and going to sell him on the street. You know, so it's a large industry, because you got children doing it, even Adderall, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Even
all
Adderall, right, which is something that's supposed to help children be more focused, while the college kids are taking it. Buying it illegally without prescriptions. And the ones who have parents who have insurance plans, their parents get them prescriptions from the doctor so that they can get it legally, and then they give it to other students.
Okay. James, you raised a lot of issues here, and I'm going to let Woody kind of respond to some of them. I mean, because
okay.
I think... No, I appreciate that you really added a lot to the conversation.
Thank you. Y'all have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, this is... So what we're looking at here... Folks, with Woody Curry, 410-319-8888. What we're looking at here is an exploding problem of the abuse of legal drugs. When I say over the counter, I don't mean that you can buy them with a prescription, that as well as the selling of those prescription drugs illegally on the street, meeting each other in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exploding across the country.
It's been there. It's the 500-pound gorilla sitting in the middle of the room that nobody seems to notice. Because where do you go? I mean, if it's legal, who do you go after? You see, there's this other component. It gets worse. You know, there's this other component. I mean, the setup for the abuse is that we look at people with substance abuse or substance use disorders. Okay.
I mean, like people who use heroin and cocaine.
Yeah. Right. The ones that everybody knows about.
Right.
That everybody's up in arms about, rightfully so, but, you know, those things. We notice a higher incidence of people with co-occurring or mental health issues amongst people who have substance use disorders than there is among the general population. Then it gets more compounded by the fact that a lot of the symptoms of drug withdrawal are the same symptoms you would see as a separate diagnosis, anxiety, depression. And so a lot of symptoms that come along with long-term drug withdrawal, the residual effects of the drug use, are often misdiagnosed as a separate diagnosis, anxiety, depression, things that come along with just going on and off of the drugs. And they are prescribed medication to help with the withdrawal symptoms that's been diagnosed as a separate thing altogether. And so they are prescribed the drugs in addition to coming off of the other drugs to make that a lot easier. And
so that becomes, you're trading one dependency for another dependency.
Change from a pencil to a pen, got same hand right.
Right, right. Right. I'm only laughing because just the way you put it is right out there, very clear.
Yeah, yes, well, that's right. What happens. Right. And then anybody that expects an addict to use drugs according to the way they are prescribed has got to, you know, really back up and take a look at what we're dealing with here.
Now, one of the things you talk about, folks, We had a couple of callers. They're gone. 410-319-8888. Join us here. We're talking about prescription drugs. The growing issue of abuse of those drugs is what's taking hold in society that make heroin and cocaine and the use of those illegal drugs pale in comparison to what we're seeing. And now, is this mostly a not an inner city issue, but an issue of the middle class, an issue of kids in college? The issue this is, and that's that also comes out because it's more difficult to demonize that class of people.
Well, that's media and the stereotyping of certain people as being addicts, when in reality that's not really true. It is concentrated in areas where there's a lot of poverty and, you know, low income and things like that, less opportunities for recreation, less money to do different things. It's cheap. It can keep you in a pretty mellow mood for hours at a time. And, you know, it takes the edge off of a lot of the stress that comes along with living in everyday life. And that's mainly why people use drugs. But this prescription drug thing is something that I think did the reverse. Whereas you look at the other drugs that started in the inner city and spread to the suburbs, this thing now that we're talking about started with the middle class and upper class and spread to the inner city. See, so you're seeing a reverse dynamic here. Rather than put the focus on the people in the inner city that are using the illegal drugs, then we look at the people who have access to the legal drugs that are abusing them, and it filtered down into the people in the inner city because, like I said, they're cheaper. And you have concentrated places where what can the police do about it? If you take the police not going to go around and read every prescription bottle, and the savvy person will get this prescription and get it refilled, and they do doctor shopping. They'll go around to different doctors and get the same thing. And then you can get them, like I said, over the internet and on the black market. Half of the drugs on the street that are being sold as pharmaceuticals are black market drugs from outside the country because that's where the money is. And nobody's going around looking for those things if you stumble across somebody that's
right.
got them.
Right. Right, right.
Or catch somebody doing it.
So the cartels have to be in on this now.
Of course. Everybody's in on it. See, this is one where everybody's involved. Well, everybody's involved in the other one, too, but, you know, only certain people are getting.
Woody Courage with us, clinical director of the Baltimore Station. We're talking about the unspoken crisis of drug abuse in our society, which is the growing numbers of people overtaking cocaine and heroin. People who are using prescription painkillers and prescription drugs and abusing those drugs, and the market is created and the addiction is creating. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Leonard in Glen Burnie, you're on the air.
How you doing, Mr. Steiner?
I'm well. Yes, welcome.
I appreciate your show today. It is very intriguing. My quick comment is, you know, who didn't see this coming? You know, you mean to tell me that I can get high off of prescription drugs and is illegal? You know, who didn't see this coming? I mean, let's put aside the fact that, you know, people have been getting high for eons, you know, with the shaman, you know, they help to, you know, forecast the future, you know, things of that nature, but crops and, you know, what God told them and things of that nature. God only knows what they were hitting back then, but now we have prescription drug abuse. I mean, it doesn't surprise me whatsoever. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Woody.
I know it. I see it all the time. And we in the treatment industry, we are coming up with strategies to sort of combat this thing. But things don't really hit the public eye or become talked about until they become almost crisis level and it's unavoidable. But it didn't just pop up overnight. It seems like it did. But medicalizing addiction solely as a medical thing is kind of missing the point. It's like the six blind men and the elephant. You're not seeing the elephant's a lot bigger than the part you got your hands on. You know, addiction is a total involvement. We in the treatment industry are now going to recovery-oriented systems of care, which means that the whole person has to be treated, not just the person that's using the drugs. So we see this now, and we're beginning to change and implement strategies that will address the whole person, you know, not just he and his family, but his resources in the community at large, and the supporting systems that a person needs to stay off of drugs. But this is something that's relatively new that's happening now, and it's going to take a while before it becomes effective. I mean, it's being implemented now. We're leaning in that direction, not only leaning in that, they're really asking that you operate with that concept in mind. But it's crisis right now as far as these things are concerned. You know, they're being used to augment people who are on methadone programs. You know, they are being used to increase or enhance the effect of what the methadone was designed for. Not saying that people on methadone programs don't have co-occurring or mental health disorders, but there's a large population who's using that as their next drug of choice, the methadone itself. Yeah, the methadone with the combination of Xanax or Klonopin or Clonidine, which gives you a longer, more intense high than you would get off of stuff that you buy on the street, and it lasts a lot longer, too. Then there's the problem once you become addicted to it, that detox from either methadone or benzos takes a longer period of time than it does for any of the street drugs like heroin and cocaine. You can get a heroin or a cocaine. They don't even give you detox for cocaine. Give you some anti-anxiety and some depression medication. But coming off of alcohol and heroin, alcohol detox is relatively long, 28 days totally for the acute phase. But the other ones with the opiates is from 3 to 7 days. And that doesn't begin to talk about methadone or the benzos or the Klonopin, these prescription drugs. These things may take 6 months to detox from them. And who's going to keep somebody in the treatment that long? So the industry is not set up for benzo detox. And it's more addictive.
It's more addictive. This used to be something that people wrote about middle-class housewives who were being given prescriptions for dexedrine or for
the elderly.
The elderly.
Yeah. Nobody's going to question grandma or grandpa or anybody about them being high unless they're drinking alcohol or shooting dope. Now, that might be the thing, but as far as them going to the medicine cabinet, getting their calming medication to sit down and, you know, who's going to bother them? They associate you. Well, when you get a certain age, you need pills. And it's okay. So that's not even being looked at. That aspect of it is not even being addressed.
I mean, and then in college, kids have always kind of taken things to stay up at night to finish their papers.
The dexedrine, we used to take it, the cram, stay up
right.
all night.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. But we're talking about something much more intense than that at the moment.
What we're talking about is what's really going on in reality. But what everybody else is doing is getting high. Pure and simple. We are a nation of addicts.
We are that.
I mean, we use more drugs than everybody else in the world put together.
You including alcohol in that?
It's a drug.
Folks, 410-319-8888. When we are, we've got a little email here. What's it say? Well, we'll take a break, but the email is this. I'd be interested to hear Woody's thoughts on how prescription drugs may affect women differently than men. If you look at the beginning of the history of modern prescription drugs, it was often women who were prescribed them to combat female, quote unquote, female problems like nervousness, depression, etc. And so who often became addicts. Does he see any lingering symptoms today where women are more likely to suffer from this kind of addiction, or has it evened out?
Well, Freud started using cocaine with women, he called women's moods and things hysteria.
Right.
And so he started prescribing drugs. And women have always been, I hate to use this term, and it's a strong term, and I'm probably going to catch it from everywhere, but victimized just by the fact that they're women. Women are more expressive and more in touch with their feelings than most men. See, men keep the feelings to themselves. Women will make their feelings known, and that makes a lot of men very uncomfortable. So give them something to quiet them down. She's hysterical. She's all over the place. And it's a way of pacifying women, I think. And it's part of the culture to look at women as somehow being whiners or hysterical or irrational and things like that. And that's not true. They're just more expressive as far as their feelings are concerned. And that makes a lot of men very uncomfortable because men, you know, we are about feelings that they are something that don't exist. Or we tough it out or we get high or take a drink and don't talk about feelings. We talk about who we are and how much money we make.
Right. How tough and bad we are.
How tough and bad we are. Right. We weren't raised to be expressive of feelings. So right. To quiet the women down or to look at women's feeling expressions as some kind of state of abnormality or something like this in this patriarchal male society, I mean, that's the way it plays.
But are you finding that more women are what's happening here, as the writer said, seeing these lingering symptoms today, where women are more likely to suffer from this kind of addiction than men, or is it all the way across the board with everybody?
I think women are more likely to abuse these drugs than men because that's a way of stabilizing or keeping them happy or feeling. They're mood-altering drugs. And our view of women are that they're moody and temperamental and all of these buzzwords.
The male perception.
Yeah, the male perception.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that most males are in denial about their moods and temperament, and they control everything, the media and everything else, so they can stay nice and safe and John Wayne Rambo behind this fence that we put up around ourselves and pretend that we're okay.
We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we're going to come back with Woody Curry, clinical director of the station. We're going to look at this issue of prescription drugs being abused in the society. It is running rampant. It's getting larger. As we said earlier in this program, we've not read much about this lately, not in the popular press, not in the popular media, but it's here that there's, since 2000, an 80% increase between 2000 and 2006, which is when the last data I saw, of abuse of prescription drugs. And there are more people abusing prescription drugs than every other drug combined in America that we think about, like heroin, cocaine, and all the rest. And we're going to come back and go to Clarence, Denise, and then Stephanie. So please hold on. We're going to come to your phone calls. We're here with Woody Curry. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Woody Curry, clinical director of the Baltimore Station. Is it the Baltimore Station or the Station? How do you say it these days?
The Baltimore Station.
Baltimore Station. One of the most unique drug rehabilitation and treatment programs in the country, right here in our community, with a program that really was designed and created by Woody Curry. We've talked about that more, and we won't do that right now. But we're here talking about the abuse of prescription drugs in our society and in our community. It is rampant. It is something we don't talk about. It is something that we don't deal with. This is something that happens whether it's doctor shopping or traditional drug dealing on the street, theft from pharmaceuticals, people's homes, getting prescriptions, as Woody said, via the internet from friends and relatives. And it is just beginning to go off the charts. And our programs are not designed to deal with it. In our society, you know, I don't think it doesn't really know how to address it at the moment. 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Steiner.
Good afternoon.
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Corey a question and hear his comments on it. In reference to how that money comes out of the system and goes back up into the system and the effects it has on the healthcare budget as a whole. It should be a line in there somewhere that says the cost of abuse and Medicare, you know, because a lot of these drugs come out of the money that they hit the streets with comes out of Medicare, I would think. And how that money goes back up the line to the corporations and back into the pockets of the shareholders and ultimately into the power structure in Washington. Do you have a comment on that, Mr. Perry?
That's one reason why I didn't want to talk about this mess. No, it's just the way we're set up. The same way that what people don't understand is that the human organism is hardwired for drugs. Drugs process in our system the way the system is already set up. Okay, that's the way addiction happens. I lost my thought about what that is that you put in a computer. That
software?
No. The software goes into the computer, but the computer is already set up to accommodate the software and run it.
Right.
Okay, and that's the way the human body. That's the way the human body is with the drugs. So I guess the way the money flows in and out of the system, as far as profit and shareholders and stocks and all of that, that infrastructure is already in place. And it's just the money that's passing through that setup right then and there. And when Mark talked about the increase in the abuse of prescription drugs, as soon as he said that the drugs increased, I'm saying to myself, yeah, because the money increased. One thing doesn't change without everything changing. This system is connected. And so when there's an increase in the abuse of drugs, there's an increase in the money being spent on the abuse. I don't know whether that answers your question, but that's the way it works.
Well, let me go to Denise. Then I'm going to ask a question about implications of legal drugs and drug companies. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Denise, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Steiner, Mr. Curry.
Welcome.
I just called, first of all, to thank you so much for including alcohol in there as a drug, for one thing, you know, because I guess it's just so considered so sophisticated and whatnot. As a recovering alcoholic, I know the other side of that, and I want to thank you for that. I also wanted to ask you if you, well, I guess you can't stress it enough, but if you would just speak on, for recovering alcoholics and addicts alike, to inform their health care providers that they are in recovery and that, you know, that because like you said, as a recovering alcoholic, you know, if the doctor tells me to take one pill every 4 hours, I'm likely to take four every 1 hour and whatnot. You know?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, if it feels good, more, you know, more is better. But if you could just, you know, speak on that just a little bit about how important it is. I mean, I thank God I put my sobriety above everything because I wouldn't have anything without it. And I let my all my health care providers know that I am in recovery, and if there's something else I can take, fine, and if not, then just grin and bear it. And I'd appreciate if you'd talk a little bit on that, please.
Thank you, Denise.
Well, you're in recovery, for real. Addicts don't follow directions. Addicts and people who use drugs for the effect are not really concerned about any of that. They're taking the drug for the effect that it gets. Most addicts know how to shop for drugs. We know how to mimic symptoms. We know how to describe just about everything in the DSM that will get you medicated. And we know how to walk in a doctor's office and talk about these symptoms and things like that. We know how to do that. Our very survival as an addict depends on us being able to have access to drugs. And that's what we're doing. You know, we know what we're doing. It's not that we don't know what we're doing. We know exactly what we're doing. And we're shopping for drugs. And we're doing it in a way that will get the drugs in our hands.
But do you think that many of the people who are abusing prescription drugs don't think of themselves as addicts.
Of course not. I mean, addict's been stereotyped as a heroin,
right,
or cocaine user.
I mean, if you're strung out on dope, you're strung out on dope.
You know you're strung out on that other stuff too. In fact, see, the danger in that, Mark, is that a lot of people are blind. I don't mean that literally can't see. They just don't know. But most of the time, it may be an excuse, but I treat it for what it is, regardless of the circumstances or the way it comes at me. But one of the major excuses that I hear from people is, well, a doctor prescribed this. I said, that has nothing to do with you being a drug addict. The doctor didn't prescribe your addiction. He prescribed medication. You knew that you couldn't take it, but you are using this thing because you got it from a doctor. It's less harmful. It's not the doctor that's abusing the drug, it's you.
But that's what I mean. I mean, I think people are saying, people who get the drugs, especially over the counter,
mm-hmm.
I keep saying over the counter, I mean, they get them from the pharmacy, they get them through the doctor mm-hmm. who writes a prescription. It's or the people are using it in college because they're, for whatever reason, they're using it.
Effect.
They don't see themselves as addicts, is what I'm saying, because I'm getting this from the doctor.
Because if they saw themselves an addict, that mean they'd have to do something about it. You see, they're in denial, pure and simple.
And it would mean that, well, what is the culpability here, if any, of the pharmaceutical industry?
They're not looking at that. I don't want to be cynical and political at the same time, but, you know.
Hard not to be sometimes.
Yeah, I know. But you remember we talked before about collateral damage?
Yeah.
I think that's more or less what goes on. You notice I said I think. I'm not there. I don't know. But based on my experience, when you look at the profit being made off of this stuff versus the amount of people that's affected, I don't think that's a cost-benefit analysis. I think that doing a cost-benefit analysis, I think that that's collateral damage. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do understand. See, we're saying that the millions of people we're talking about in this country who are strung out one way or the other, 7-10 million people, whatever it is, mm-hmm. on prescription drugs are collateral damage.
When you look at business, now we're going into something else, ethics. Are they the same?
That's a good question, isn't it? I mean, when you say that 30-40% of high school kids might try a joint or smoke reefer, but 10% of high school kids say they are abusing painkillers. That's a huge number of children. 10% of high school seniors, and shockingly, 40% of teenagers say that they think that abusing these drugs is safer than doing street drugs. In other words, it's okay if I get some Oxycontin or I take a Dextrin or whatever people are taking and do that because it's not as dangerous as me going on the corner and buying a bag of Coke or buying a bag of heroin.
Yeah, well, the way things set up to run, you're going to make some money before somebody's stopped. Right. So what you have to do when you look at that is look the way these statistics are looked at. You know, you have to look a longitudinal study over an extended period of time to see how many people just experimented, to see how many people actually became addicted, see how many people actually went into treatment. And that happens over a period of years, say 8-9 years. Then you have enough data to make these kind of comparisons and see if there's really a doggone problem. And while this study's going on, somebody's getting paid. So there's no way out of it.
Well, let me ask the listeners a question. I'm going to come back to ask you a question. Folks, 410-319-8888. I'm curious how you've seen this. I mean, many of you out there, wherever you're listening to us from, here in the state of Maryland, D.C., Pennsylvania, Delaware, around, how you see this in your own lives, people around you, the use of prescription drugs. There's a ring a bell in your head that someone close to you is doing this, or that you don't even think about it because it's because they are legal prescription drugs, and the growing abuse of that in society. I mean, it's if this is as big as it's being made out to be by the drug reports I'm reading from the DEA and the NIH and these studies coming out now nationally, then the money we are not spending on treating people who are addicted to illegal street drugs will pale in comparison to what it would take to address this problem.
Yeah. I don't know. The only where I'm at with it is the point of contact. I'm in contact with it, as usual, right in the mix, right where it's being done. So quite naturally, I would see it up close and personal, which would make me more aware of it, and plus aware of what stands in the way of doing anything about it. But until it reaches some kind of full-blown epidemic proportions, then it's not going to be a problem, you see, because the excuse that the doctor prescribed them for me, the excuse that I have anxiety disorder, that's not an excuse for people who are really suffering from these things, but that are being prescribed for them, it's out there. I wonder how many people know that. You watched the Grammy Awards last week, right?
I watched a little bit. I've not a lot of.
Anyway, Eminem won the Grammy for the best hip-hop album of the year.
Right.
His whole album is called Recovery, and it's about his addiction to prescription drugs and what he had to do to come off of them to get back on his feet and become successful. People listen to the music, and they hear all of that, but they don't hear it. It's the same with the people using the drugs. The evidence is right there in front of them, but they don't see it and they don't hear it. Why? Because they don't want to. Once you acknowledge something, then that would mean, implies that you're going to do something about it. And if you're addicted and you have a supply of drugs, you aren't going to do anything about it. You're going to continue to use the drugs as long as the supply lasts and as long as there are ways to obtain and procure those drugs, you're going to keep on doing it.
And as long as we're not talking about it, as long as it's not in our face, as long as it's not seen as a problem, a crime, because people aren't dying in the streets over it, people aren't going to talk about it.
I know. You don't hear that, oh, he overdosed over some Xanax. You don't hear that. Keith Ledger died from drug overdoses. I mean, those things are looked at. What they call those are accidental overdoses.
Right. Accidental overdose.
Accidental overdose.
Right.
So somebody somewhere knew that what was being done and the consequences, the results, are looked at as accidental. The heroin users accidentally overdose? Mm-mm. With prescription drugs, it's classified as an accidental overdose, and accidents aren't normal. They are anomalies.
And they're not your responsibility because it's an accident.
Yeah, it's an accident. So as long as they are classified as an accidental overdose, then that means that, you know, oh, he wasn't looking at what he was doing.
I just read something else that came out of this. Folks, 410-319-8888 is the number here. 410-319-8888. I want to get your thoughts on the use of prescription drugs to get high that is taking over and leaving behind in the dust, so to speak, those who are using cocaine and heroin. 410-319-8888, why it's here and where do we go with it, and what it says about us and our families and how all of us may be abusing this in some way or another. Not all of us, but many people are. The DEA, I just read something this before we go on the air, the DEA, Internet Drug Trafficking Initiatives, over the past 3 years, have identified and gone after organizations here and around the world, and investigations, things like, but it's all on the web. The tens of millions of these prescription drugs and tens of millions of dollars in assets, hundreds of millions, are being done over the internet.
I said that early on. That's where they come from, with the pharmaceutical stamp on them, and they're counterfeit. You see, that's how big a problem it is. Nobody wants to tackle this because nobody's got an answer.
Right.
I'm not sure there is one right now. But to treat the person who accidentally or otherwise becomes addicted to them, if they want to be treated. And that's a big part of if. The erroneous assumption is that everybody using drugs wants to stop. No, it's the opposite.
But it means
most people using drugs don't want to stop.
That and that there are twice as many, more than twice as many drug abusers in this country than we are accounting for, because we're not including, including the folks using pharmaceutical drugs into the mix of addicts.
Well, one other thing too is that most people, when they think of drugs, they don't think of alcohol.
Well, then we'd even have to quadruple it.
That's what I meant when I said the elephant is a lot bigger than the pot we got our hands on.
Right. 410-319-8888. Celeste, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
What I don't understand is how they get overdosed on pharmaceutical drugs. It's hard for me to get my prescriptions when I need a refill. They have to call a doctor, and they have to make sure it's all right. I don't understand what's going on. Why are the doctors letting – there should be a tighter rein on the doctors and the prescription fillers, I think.
That's interesting. Woody?
The question she's asking is what I meant earlier when I said, what do you do about it? I mean, what is it, the Harrison Act, where every doctor has to sign off on how much opiates or cocaine they're dispensing? Okay, I don't think the same thing goes with benzos and those other drugs that people are abusing. Anti-anxiety medications, antidepressants, and things like that. All of these things are mood-altering drugs. And mood-altering drugs have a way of people becoming dependent on them. Okay, and my experience is that a lot, well, not so much now, but a lot of times doctors don't have a whole lot of experience dealing with addicts because they don't see them for the addiction. They see them for other things, right?
Right, right?
So they're not looking at the addict, and the addict's in denial, so he's not going to tell the doctor he's an addict. So you can't just blame the doctor. It's a system-wide thing, you know, and the person that's abusing the drugs are just as responsible as the person who's supplying the drugs. Because if the person that's abusing them don't take some responsibility for it, then there's not a whole lot anybody else can do, regardless of what kind of drug it is.
And I think there are people who can afford these.
Too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about people who have the money to pop out $250 a month or whatever it is for an extra prescription from the physician.
Everybody south of Virginia goes to Florida, where they have pain pill drive-ins.
Right.
All up and down the highway. Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia. I mean, these states are experiencing levels of addiction with OxyContin and stuff like that that goes way beyond what we see here.
What do you mean by drive-in?
They had a big thing on 60 Minutes where in Florida you can go down and they have pain clinics set up like a filling station. You go in and describe what kind of pain you got, and the doctor writes you a prescription. You go next door and get it filled. And that's the drug capital of the world for, you know, they used to call OxyContin hillbilly heroin. Because that's, you know, that's the slang name for people buying and selling OxyContin. More so down in the South and in, you know, Tennessee and Kentucky and places, West Virginia. All go to Florida. Florida become the drug capital for, you know.
Red states.
Mm-hmm.
410-319.
It's not political.
I just said that to be funny.
No.
410-319-8888. Michael and Belair, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Michael.
Thank you for allowing me to say a few words. I just want to say that there's something. I'm going to open up a new can of worms, and that's advertisement. You can't sit down in front of a television and watch 30 minutes of television without being bombarded by these pharmaceutical companies that are telling us, that are trying to sell us on this, that you can have a happier life, you can have a pain-free life, or you can do anything, almost anything, if you just take this one pill or do this one thing. You know, and that's really, I think it's a travesty that we live in a country where millions of dollars are poured into advertisements like that. And the benefits that come from that, I don't doubt that there's a lot of people out there who have legitimate ailments, but I think that with the money that the pharmaceutical companies pour into that, I think that a lot of it is more towards the advertisement of just convincing people.
Mm-hmm. Woody?
I did a group right before I came in here, and it was kind of cynical, but, you know, my clients and I, we can do things. And I told them, based, listening to the last caller, that I was bamboozled a long time ago when I was told that the purpose in life was to be happy. And I was told what I needed to get in order to be that way, right? And life, most of my disappointments and frustrations and fears and doubts and insecurities were based on that thing that was put in my head a long time ago, that the purpose in life is to be happy. So when life showed up, I thought it was something wrong with me. It's a game being run, like the guy said. You set it up. It's a con. I was conned. Not maliciously.
Mm-hmm.
But people who told me that actually believed that too. That the purpose in life is to be happy. Well, somebody needs to tell life that. Because life doesn't seem to cooperate all the time. I was totally unprepared to do that.
But that's what we think in America, and these drug advertisements on television and every magazine.
It's perpetrating the same myth.
That myth.
That was my answer
to his question.
Go to your
doctor, ask for this drug.
Yeah, that was my answer to his question. That core belief that life is about being happy, personally.
Right.
Right? So by any means necessary, you see. And most people are still running off of that.
And also this adds to the whole medical and healthcare issue in America in terms of the rising costs. A lot of it has to do with the prescription drugs.
It's the pursuit of happiness.
The pursuit of happiness.
We're guaranteed that constitutionally.
I don't think that's what they meant.
I know they did. I'm being cynical.
I know you are.
I'm
just teasing.
Yeah.
Michael, thank you for that call. Let's go to Fran and Laurel. You're on the air. Very quick thought, Fran. Hi, Fran, you're on the air. Fran?
Hey.
You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Very quick for you, Mark. You're right on the money with his last thought that he made, and I want to just jump into there and say this. Our youth has evolved to new forms of getting high. Now they're using the spray, the air spray that comes out to clean your computer. That's a type of Freon, and it's poison. And kids are now sniffing that, and they're dying. What is happening here is human beings are sensitive beings, and they're being put in environments when they're young before they're prepared to know how to deal with that. And then they're told, well, you have to cope. That's the way that it is. And guess what? They're not coping. They're dying because they can't cope with it because they don't know how. They're not being taught that. And this is what's been happening for years and worldwide. And I think you're right on the money there with that myth. It was a myth because it was taught to all of us so we could be here and suffer and realize that there is no happiness here, that planet Earth truly is an evil place, and you just do the best you can
all
while
right.
you're here.
And a closing thought, Mr. Curry?
I don't think planet Earth is an evil place. Planet's beautiful. There's people around here that just don't know what the devil they're doing, and then some people that do know what they're doing, and one's feeding off of the other one. I think that's what the doggone game is. You know, there's people who know exactly what they're doing, and there's people who don't know what they're doing, and that's where the evil part comes in. The evil is ignorance.
And I think that as we've talked about before, and this is not something we have time to get into right now, but the whole concept of suffering and understanding that comes with the human condition, and rather than address it and deal with it and take control of our lives,
mm-hmm.
know what's that we'd rather cover them up with now, even more people cover them up with prescription drugs, not the drugs of the street.
The pursuit of happiness.
Pursuit of happiness. It's always good to help you, have you here, help us kind of walk through this stuff, Woody Curry. We'll see you next month and see what you bring our way next time.
Okay, I hope it's something different. I doubt it, though.
Woody Curry. Clinical director of the Baltimore Station, has been with us. And you can go to our website. We'll link to some of the articles you've been reading about prescription drugs to prepare for this show and the abuse of those in our society, so you can see more about that yourselves. And thank you all so much for being part of this program. As we take this break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show. Well, I'll do that when I come back from this break, because we want to get to our break and come back with our next bunch of guests. And we're going to talk about Wisconsin. Do public workers have a right to collective bargaining? Should they have the right to collective bargaining and unionizing? We'll be debating that next hour, as well as taking a look at what's going on, latest news from Wisconsin. Stay with us.